Good afternoon. I'll call this meeting of the House Housing Finance and Policy Committee to order. Representative Igbaje, would you move the minutes?
So move, Mr. Chair.
Vice Chair Igbaje moves the minutes. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
And I'll note a quorum is present. Members, we're going to go. We have four bills. We are going to move a little bit out of order. Up first, we're going to hear my bill. And so I will turn the gavel over to Vice Chair Igbaje.
Thank you, Chair Howard. I will move that your bill, House File 1412, be re-referred to the House Ways and Means Committee. Representative Howard, to your bill.
Chair Igbaje, members, this bill is an incredibly important one. It's something I've been working on ever since I've been here at the legislature. From an economic perspective, from a moral perspective, from an equity perspective, and from an efficient use of our state dollars perspective, we can no longer look away from our state's role to preserve our naturally occurring affordable housing, or commonly referred to as NOAA. And I still want to, we've talked a little bit more about this, but still want to ground us in that definition of what is naturally occurring affordable housing, which is housing that is affordable in our communities across the state through no public or government subsidy, mostly by virtue of its age. There are hundreds of thousands of units of housing all across the state. But what is happening to this housing is that it's evaporating. And I want to highlight two stories from my community in recent years that sort of tell the story of what's happening with naturally occurring affordable housing. Two stories with very different outcomes. So in 2015, I was a council member in Richfield. I'd been a council member for a few months when we heard that Crossroads at Penn was being purchased by a for-profit real estate company, and they planned to renovate the facility and remake their tenant rules and displace those tenants from our community. This is a 750-unit building in Richfield with 2,000 members of our community living there, a diverse population of family, seniors, and people that have lived there for more than a decade. And it really rocked the community. I vividly remember having conversations with people that were just at a loss and didn't know what to do and didn't know where to turn. They turned to the city. And, you know, we were kind of caught flat-footed. It hadn't been a situation where government had really seen themselves involved. They saw, you know, this is a real estate transaction. But what this real estate transaction did was displace 2,000 people from our community. Over 100 kids in our school district were displaced. 40 children experienced homelessness as a result. And this, what happened at Crossroads at Penn, is happening all across our state, our metro region in particular, where speculation and investors from the coast are coming in, purchasing these buildings, putting in nice countertops, raising the rent several hundred dollars, and folks are left looking for affordable housing in the wake of that. Now I want to highlight a second story. Just 18 months later, I was a council member still, and we caught wind of Seasons Park being purchased by a developer. This is our second largest NOAA property in Richfield with 400 units. It's our only building that has many 2- and 3-bedroom units. So 300 children lived at Seasons Park. We heard that the sale was about to go through. But myself and Councilmember Maria Reagan Gonzalez, at the time was the council member, we were able to scramble. We connected with Aon, a nonprofit developer who is in the business of purchasing and acquiring NOAA property. We worked with them, and they pulled a rabbit out of the hat. And they were able to purchase Seasons Park and save the homes of those 400 units and hundreds of families in Richfield. And I live near Seasons Park. I've been there just a few months ago, door knocking, and seeing some of the faces of folks that this is their home, and they're there because Aon was able to come in and purchase Seasons Park. Now, There are, for every Seasons Park, there are many, many more crossroads at Penn. It is a challenging environment, and we are losing our affordable housing. And there aren't really tools that the state brings to bear in this space currently at all. And so what this bill says is that the state has a vested interest in preserving our naturally occurring affordable housing, because once it's gone, it's gone. And it is much more efficient to preserve the affordable housing that we have than to build new. I'll make a note that, you know, we have talked a lot about big dollars in this committee, right, for housing. Just to make up for the 750 units of affordable housing lost at Crossroads at Penn, that would require upwards of $100 million investment in housing infrastructure bonds, not just one unit in one community in Minnesota. So it is much more efficient to be able to preserve the NOAA properties we have. And that's what this bill does. It sets out a state fund that would allow nonprofits to use resources to do important rehab on these properties when they acquire them. It would also allow folks to, the nonprofit developers, to have the resources to acquire and keep affordable and be in the space with these private investors and have a leg to stand on. And so this will help us preserve the affordable housing we do have, a key component in how we address our long-term affordable housing challenges. I really look forward to the discussion. Lastly, I just want to say I want to thank the governor. He includes $100 million for this program in his budget. It's a priority we share, and look forward to making this the year we get this across the finish line. Thank you, Vice Chair Gbadje.
Thank you, Chair Howard. I have a couple of testifiers, and I will go ahead and start with Warren Hansen. Please state your name for the record, and welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon. My name is Warren Hansen. I'm the president and CEO of Greater Minnesota Housing Fund. And we're a nonprofit charitable funder of affordable housing, and we have financed about 18,000 units of affordable housing throughout the state in both Greater Minnesota and the metro area over the past 27 years. We work in all 87 counties. I'm speaking in support of House File 1412, which would provide up to $200 million, an amount that's been discussed, for housing stabilization, or what is referred to today as NOAA preservation. And that would preserve the affordability of 6,000 units of at-risk NOAA housing throughout the state of Minnesota. I would mention that we work in close coordination with the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency and have worked with them on many fronts, including supportive housing, workforce housing, and we look forward to working with the agency on NOAA preservation. What I'd like to do is just refer you to this handout. This is a slide deck that will just give you a little bit of additional context about what this bill would do. And if you look at slide number one, right behind the cover there, as Chair Howard mentioned, naturally occurring affordable housing makes up 70% of all the affordable housing stock in the state of Minnesota. This is affordable because of its age, and it really meets a tremendously important need that we have for affordable housing among our lower income households. It is Class B and Class C housing, meaning it's a little older, it's generally very well maintained, and by virtue of its age, it just requires a little extra attention by property management to keep it safe, decent, and affordable. It's typically built between 1940 and 1990, so after that, it probably is a little bit newer and a little bit more expensive. The rents are typically between $700 a month and $1,300 a month, depending on the size of the the number of bedrooms. And it is affordable to families at 60% AMI and below. And as I'll mention a little bit later, much lower income households, 50% AMI, 40% AMI, and even 30% AMI households live in this housing. And if you look at the next slide, there's something called a NOAA heat map there. And that slide is showing us where this NOAA housing exists. This little picture on the left there is the Twin Cities metro area. And as you can see, it's more frequently in the older neighborhoods, located in the older neighborhoods and the first and second ring suburbs. The graphic on the right shows the state and shows that NOAA housing, this older housing that is at risk, is in many of the workforce job center communities throughout the state. The names of the cities are not there, but you can kind of see Grand Rapids and Moorhead and Mankato and Marshall, a lot of communities around the state that have this older housing stock because they've been job centers for decades and decades. If you look at the next slide, Minnesota needs to preserve NOAA now. This is showing us that we have lost 52,000 units of NOAA housing between 2013 and 2019 in the metro area alone. And during that same time period, 2013 to 2019, we've only added affordable housing units of 7,700. So we're falling behind as we lose NOAA housing stock. We're falling behind on NOAA affordability that is so much needed and is really the source of our housing crisis, a lack of housing stock that's affordable to the lower income households. If you look at the next slide, which is entitled The Gap to Preserve NOAA Grows Every Year, over time, since about 2017, we have seen the because of the crisis of housing, lack of affordable housing, we've seen the price of this housing stock and the rents of this housing stock accelerate and increase dramatically. And what that has done, the lower line there shows the maximum cost of what is affordable. And the upper line there shows what real costs are today to acquire and rehab and stabilize NOAA housing. And that has created a gap. That's the gap that we're asking for today, to help fill that gap so we can keep the rents affordable but still acquire and preserve and stabilize this housing. The next slide shows an example. Sometimes examples are very helpful. This is a property that could be anywhere in the state, could be in the metro, could be in any community in greater Minnesota. Happens to be in Rochester, obviously a real job center for the whole state. This property was acquired by a NOAA preservation organization, the Rochester Area Foundation. In this case, they paid only $89,000 per unit. As we'll talk about in just a second, this is less than half the cost than building new. These were 36 units, two bedrooms, family units, $900 a month rents. And without going through the numbers there, I just want to emphasize that the gap had to be filled by philanthropy in this project. It was a one-time deal. They're not going to be able to do it again. Philanthropy has an extreme shortage of money. They have other demands on the charitable resources. But they provided $21,000 of gap financing per unit that kept this property affordable to the workforce, the lower-income households in Rochester. The next slide, which talks about NOAA serving people earning very low incomes, is the real zinger of a story here, which is that 94% of all the units in the NOAA properties that we've acquired, that Ann has acquired, serve incomes below 60% AMI. But even more important than that is 81% serve incomes below 50% AMI, and 47% serve incomes below 30% AMI. And that's partly because we require, and the state would require, this program would require, that any landlord participating in this program would have to accept Section 8 and other rental assistance program resources for their tenants, which is less and less common among private landlords, and especially the new speculator landlords that are acquiring and upscaling their properties. For example, the property that Chair Howard talked about stopped accepting Section 8 renters, even though their rent would be fully paid. The next slide, NOAA preservation is an equity issue. I would just draw your attention to the second and the last lines on that chart. What this says is that only 25% of African-American households own their home. 75% are renters. So that's who is impacted, along with all the other households of color here, with the loss of this very affordable rental housing. The flip of that, unfortunately, and Minnesota is notorious for this, is that 75% or more of white households own their own home and only 25% of white households rent. So it really is an equity issue. The next slide here is the preservation of NOAA as a cost issue, a cost efficiency issue. Again, Chair Howard indicated this. It costs somewhere between $100,000 or maybe $150,000 at the very top to buy and rehab a NOAA unit. Obviously, it's going to be in a multifamily building, but on a per-unit basis, that would be $150,000 to acquire and rehab that property. What does it cost to build a new rental unit? It's $300,000 or more. Right now, because of supply chain issues, that number has gone up to $350,000 in many, many cases for new construction. So I'll close by just saying that this is a really critical program, a really critical need, and Minnesota has a chance to kind of intervene right now in a market dynamic that has frankly been lost on the West Coast and the East Coast, where this kind of NOAA housing was lost, it was speculated on, and it hardly exists at all because of the speculation that has occurred by major investors and REITs and others, and just market pressures. And we have a chance in Minnesota to circumvent that and make a real difference for a lot of households that currently live in this housing and who would be displaced with the kind of thing that happened at Crossroads. The last thing I wanted to mention, and I think this is an important way to think about this, is that NOAA preservation is an upstream homelessness prevention opportunity. If we can prevent the loss of this housing, we will prevent homelessness when that housing is lost. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hansen. The next testifier I have on my list is Mayor Hollis Winston. And then after that on deck will be Jerlene Bryant. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
So my name is Hollis Winston. I am mayor of Brooklyn Park. So Madam Chair and representatives, please forgive me. I'm usually on the other side, so forgive that. But I come here in my capacity as mayor of Brooklyn Park. You know, if I just get a little bit into the demographics of Brooklyn Park and give you some background in terms of what we're dealing with. So Brooklyn Park is the sixth largest city in the state, fourth largest in the metro. When we talk about naturally affordable occurring housing, we probably have about 6,000 units of overall apartments in Brooklyn Park. About 5,000 of those in Brooklyn Park are naturally affordable occurring housing. And if you do the math, and you just you say a modest three people per apartment, that's about 15,000 people that are affected by naturally affordable or NOAA occurring housing. So, you know, Brooklyn Park has in some regards been a little bit of the poster child for this, but when we talk about a place like Huntington Place, right, who has out of that number maybe 2,000 to 3,000 residents who live in that building alone, it's incredibly important that we are able to sustain and maintain that housing. Because the way we look at it in Brooklyn Park and other cities that are nearby, we talk about even a Robbinsdale or a New Hope or a Brooklyn Center. If we're not able to sustain some of that naturally affordable occurring housing because the system hasn't been put in place to do that, we're dealing with homelessness that's going to affect all of our cities. And none of our cities has the systems to deal with that particular level of homelessness. So for us, it's incredibly important that we address that. I think when we talk about partners who are dealing with Huntington Place, you know, with a place like Huntington Place, and we're not coming up here as a city that's simply saying we want the legislature to do all of the work. We put money in terms of supporting a Huntington Place, I think to the tune of around $6 million. I think Congressman Phillips is probably putting something towards that as well. But people are putting skin in the game. But when we look up and down that Zane corridor, we have maybe a few thousand units of that naturally affordable occurring housing that also need that particular assistance. I don't want to belabor the point, but I will say Brooklyn Park since the 50s and the 60s has primarily been looked at as a location for affordable housing. And if it's not addressed, we put that at risk. So traditionally people have said, okay, Brooklyn Park, if you're dealing with a specific issue, you can get affordable housing out there. If you're a new family that's starting out, there's going to be affordable housing in Brooklyn Park. If this continues to become dilapidated, people cannot look at our city in that manner. And I know that people have been focusing quite a bit on building new affordable housing. But here's the reality. With the amount of affordable housing that currently exists, if that continues to go the direction it's at, we're going to find ourselves back here in 10 or 15 years when those new units have been built saying, oh, we don't have enough housing again because we have let the naturally affordable occurring housing continue to dilapidate and go in the wrong direction. So for us as a city, it's incredibly important. And I will also say this, that people have looked at not just Brooklyn Park, but they've looked at the Northwest suburbs, and they said that's going to be a place that we invest in affordable housing. So what we're saying is if the metro area, if the state as a whole has looked at for different programs that they've had for families that are starting out, if you have continuously looked at Brooklyn Park as a place for affordable housing, we need the state's support to continue to ensure that that naturally affordable occurring housing continues to be there so that we can continue to allow young families to start out, so that we can continue to let seniors live next to the people in their community. Last thing, mayors can go on and on, right? I think if you're talking about Huntington Place and some of the other naturally affordable, NOAA will say that along that corridor, if that goes under, I think the disruption to households in terms of, we've seen the pandemic in terms of what happened to youth who just couldn't get a education in person, right? Well, if that goes under and people are displaced, you're dealing with not just a few thousand, you're dealing with thousands of people where their children's education are going to be disrupted, their ability to maintain jobs, their ability to move forward. That bill is going to come forward down the road, and people are going to say, well, what's the cost of this social program, or what's the cost of that program? We have every opportunity right now to head that off by dealing with something that is actually in some ways more affordable than just building a ton of new housing. We have to do that as well, but we also need to maintain this because it is a cost-effective way to address this housing. So thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, committee, for your time, and I appreciate you allowing me to speak and hearing me out.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Next up is Jerlene Bryant. Welcome back to the committee, Ms. Bryant. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Given honor to Chair Howard, members of the committee, my name is Geraldine Bryant. I am a resident of Aon, and I have been asked to speak about the importance of passing House 5-1412 bill. This bill will support the preservation of the affordable housing we already have here in Minnesota. After my husband and I divorced, I wanted to improve myself. I took classes to get a bachelor's degree in human services. And I am now a few classes away from a master's in children education. I volunteered as an English and a reading tutor in Richfield, where I live. And I was a community organizer at Crossroads, where I lived at that time. I love where I live. There was a great big park and a swimming pool, and my grandchildren would come to visit me there. I felt like I was at home. I had lived there for 15 years when we found out the building was being sold. The new owners started doing construction and raised the rent so that most of us couldn't afford it anymore. I saw tenants throwing their belongings in the trash. I saw tenants crying. I said to myself, What love got to do with it? People's livelihood were being thrown out just because they were poor. Some tenants went into infected shelter. I went to Normandale Lake Estate, and I was there a little more than a year. Then we got another letter saying that building two was going to be sold. Some of my belongings hadn't even been unpacked. I was very tired. I was tired of moving. I told a public officer I was not going to move. I felt just like Rosa Parks in the South when she had to give up her seat on the bus to give it to another person that they thought was more important than her. Then I found out Aon had bought Seasons Park in Richfield. I've lived here now for almost 6 years, and I finally feel like I'm at home. At my age, knowing I'm not going to have to move again, it's a safe haven for me. It's a peace of mind because you just tired of moving, and you need to have a home. You need to know you are not going to have to worry about the rent. You need to know that just because you are poor, you still matter. I ask you all today to pass House 51412 bill. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. Thank you again.
Thank you, Ms. Bryant. Before moving on to public testimony, I did know that there is an amendment that's being offered. Nash? Okay. Representative Nash, would you like to offer your A1 amendment?
I would, Madam Chair. I'm sure the Chair will be happy to take this one. I would move the A1, and the A1 puts into the bill an exact dollar amount. What we've seen in lines 3.2 through 3.34, we're talking about money that's going to be going to MHFA, and it's several dots, so we have another bill with a blank appropriation. And I mean, come on, this is too many bills. We did go through and tally up what you have to date, and between the biennium of 24-25 and 26-27, you're now at $8,790,836. That's a lot, and we don't know what today is, so I'm just trying to do some budget trimming here, and we're going to offer this for $2 before it's, I think we had a $1 amendment, so we're being twice as generous. And yes, this is completely humorous, guys. Don't get angry at me. I can feel the heat from behind me. When we do bills that spend money, you have to put the amount in the bill. It's just that simple. So I appreciate this and look forward to our conversation.
Thank you, Representative Nash. Representative Howard.
Chair Igbaje, Representative Nash, I would urge a no vote. I will give a little more context. I do think that, you know, as you know, this committee is going to be entrusted with putting together an omnibus budget bill. And so the bills that we're here are going to make up that bill. We're going to confront some choices because the needs are great. I do think that, so for context, we funded this bill in our omnibus bill last year at I believe, $100 million. This is an area where I believe the governor's budget has $100 million, and the need definitely is commensurate of that or greater. Hopefully in a couple weeks, we'll have budget targets. We'll be able to have a fuller conversation and fill in some of those dots, but this is a significant need, and I think you'll see a significant investment. So I'd urge you no vote.
Representative Nash, final.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think if you even kept it at last year's number, that's all the more reason to do the. I remember my math teacher always criticizing me for not showing my work. You know, sometimes you can just see the answer in your head and you just skip a couple of steps because you know what the answer is. Clearly, you know it's going to be at least $100 million. Show the work. Show the work. I failed a math test. All the answers were right. I just didn't show the work because I just skipped a couple of steps. That's what you're trying to do here. We understand that you want to spend the money, and naturally occurring affordable housing is important. And I agree that we need multiple types of housing to solve this problem. And you and I are in lockstep on that. We get there differently on a regular basis. But this is an important conversation. Show the work. Put the number in. You know, so adding $100 million, this is going to make it $8,890,836. Whew, that's a lot. I'm going to bet all the money in my wallet against all the money in your wallet that your target is not almost $9 billion. But if it is, that'll be a fairly animated conversation, I'm sure. But with that, Madam Chair, I'm going to withdraw this so that I don't have to go down in defeat on my $2 amendment. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Nash. Any other testimony from the public on this amendment or the bill? Okay, moving to the bill. Representative, who should I start with? Okay, Representative Petersburg, I'll start with you and then I'll go to Representative Nash.
Thank you. Just a quick question, Madam Chair. This motion for this bill, where was it going to be going to?
Thank you, Representative Petersburg. We are referring this House file to the Ways and Means Committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to Chair Howard. That kind of begs the question of I sit on the Ways and Means Committee, and we deal with financial dollars and financial pieces. And so my question is kind of in the same regard to Representative Nash. How can we send a bill to Ways and Means that we don't know what the dollar value is?
Representative Howard.
What is that promise?
Chair, thank you, Representative Petersburg. The intent is to put this into an omnibus bill. We do want to get this bill to Ways and Means just to have some options, some vehicles as the session proceeds. But when we'll see this again is with dollars filled in an omnibus finance bill.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you. So to make it clear, we're sending this to Ways and Means, but we're not expecting Ways and Means to hear it. Is that what you're saying?
Representative
Howard. Yes, Representative Petersburg.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Representative Petersburg. Representative Nash, we'll go back to you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To the author and chair, NOAA housing, not just apartment buildings, but it's single family dwellings and so on. What is the breakdown of privately owned versus not-for-profit owned? And you may not know that, but if you do, that'd be great.
Representative Howard.
Chair Igbaje, Representative Nash, the breakdown for both. You're asking what's the breakdown of what's privately owned versus nonprofit owned in the NOAA space and for both multi-tenant or single-family home?
Perfect.
That is a good question. I don't have the breakdown. Mr. Hansen might have an idea. I think there is a big mix.
Okay.
Representative Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I want to harken back to a bill that we have discussed here about the prohibition on private ownership of single-family dwellings, and you did agree that it's not just apartments, so a single-family dwelling. What happens if the ability for people who own single-family NOAA houses goes away because they obviously don't live there? What happens to the market then? Because that's Vice Chair Agbaje's bill, and then.
Sorry, Representative Nash, I just want to, if I can just remind the audience to please silence all their devices, please. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate that.
Yes, Representative Nash.
Just what happens to the market, Mr. Chair, if private ownership of rentable single-family buildings goes away? Because it seems to me that would be a fairly destabilizing event.
Representative Howard.
Chair Badger, Representative Nash, I'm trying to connect the dots here. But this bill would be... in terms of the folks that would utilize these resources, it would be nonprofit organizations that would use the resources to either help with gap financing to purchase housing or to rehab existing properties that are owned by nonprofit. So in terms of currently, there are for-profit owners of NOAA But this bill would deal with resources in terms of ensuring that the nonprofit folks that do this work, that are engaged in this work, can help preserve and keep our naturally occurring affordable housing affordable and in good shape and quality.
Representative Nash, any final comments?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair, and then I'll be done. Well, my point, and yes, it was a little tangential, but if you're only focusing on the not-for-profit ownership of of single-family dwellers in the NOAA equation, and we were to pass Representative Agbaje's bill that outlaws the ability to have people who are private owners own this, I think that you're going to. You said, I think your testifier also said that if you could do this, this will solve the homelessness from a NOAA perspective. I think if we do this other bill, it's going to blow it up, because then we won't have anybody who can own our privately held buildings. I am troubled that this is being referred out to Ways and Means, and apparently it's a vehicle bill. So that's fine. That's what chairs do. But again, this is another $100 million that is now at the $8.8 billion. Deeply troubling, because once again, and I think yesterday is the first day that we've talked about inventory issues. This is once again not solving an inventory issue, but urge members to vote no. And not sure if Lee Johnson's going to, but I'll just jump the string and I'll ask for a roll call.
Roll call having been requested. Representative Howard, any comments? And then we'll move down the list. And yes, Representative Johnson, you are on the list. Any comments, Representative Howard?
I'll just say 100 or more, because I think that, in terms of your doing the math, that's the only comment I'd say. Yeah.
A couple hundred million?
Right. So I'm being glib, but honestly, the need is that great. And as we're considering investment, we are considering a resource at greater than that, because it's needed.
Thank you. Representative Myers?
Thank you, Chair. And, not to belabor the point, but you did, it is about the number. In the presentation here, it talks, $100 million to $200 million. And, there's not a number in there, but is there a number that you have in your head?
Representative Howard?
Chair Agbaje, when we've looked at the need for what we could preserve, a number at about, that's kind of, I guess, how I've looked at it, is about the impact. And so we're going to face choices with an overall budget target and have to kind of look at sort of where we can have the most impact. So for context, at around $200 million a year, we could preserve about 5,000 units a year. That's sort of when we're going to be making those decisions, top of mind for me and for I think all of us should be the impact of those public dollars.
Any further?
Yeah. So you're shooting for something closer to not one, two, three. I'm just trying to get an idea so that I know. I mean, I think about this stuff not just in this committee. It's, outside too. So, as the lead author on the bill, I'm just interested to, just get your thoughts on that.
Representative Howard.
Chair Agbaje, Representative Myers, I think 100 to 200 million is a range that sort of is in the ballpark of, I think, what we ought to consider.
Representative Johnson.
Chair Agbaje, Chair Howard, I'm disappointed in you. You're sending a bill, in fact, your bill, out of this committee without a $8 amount, where this committee is the one who's supposed to put that in there. Responsibility of this committee, unless we're just turning into a housing policy committee. But last I looked, it was a housing policy and finance. And when you're in a finance committee, as I've been chair of in the past, you do the dollar amount. You don't let Ways and Means do it. Chair Howard, I'm going to make a recommendation to you. You can do as you want. But if I would recommend, until you have a number to send to Ways and Means, I would recommend that you lay this bill on the table to put that number in to send it there if you can use it as a vehicle bill. But any numbers in this bill should come from this committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Johnson. Representative Hassan.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Chair Howard, for this bill. I know that it feels like that you have been singing the same song, and I have heard this bill multiple times. I want to thank you for your commitment to affordable housing and the work that you have put into this bill. I'm not disappointed in you. I'm proud of your work because, as we know, there is housing crisis in the state. Our families can't find affordable units to rent. They can't find affordable units to buy. We're in a housing crisis, and we must do everything absolutely possible to find a solution. If you have a toolbox and one of the tools don't work, you're not going to stop until you find a tool that works. So right now, we're pulling out, you know, different things from our toolbox to make sure that we can figure out this housing crisis. And I am co-author on this bill, and I'm proud to support it. So thank you for your work.
Thank you, Representative Hassan. With that, we will do the roll call. The clerk will call the roll.
Chair Howard.
Aye.
Chair Howard, aye. Vice Chair Igbaje.
Aye.
Vice Chair Igbaje, aye. Representative Johnson.
No.
Representative Johnson, nay. Representative Shaw.
Aye.
Representative Shaw, aye. Representative Dotseth.
Nay.
Representative Dotseth, nay. Representative Hassan.
Hassan votes aye.
Representative Hassan, aye. Representative Hussein.
Aye.
Representative Hussein, aye. Representative Kozlowski.
Aye.
Representative Kozlowski, aye. Representative Myers.
Nay.
Representative Myers, nay. Representative Nash.
Nash, no.
Representative Nash, nay. Representative Norris.
Yes.
Representative Norris, aye. Representative Perez Vega.
Aye.
Representative Perez Vega, aye. Representative Petersburg.
No.
Representative Petersburg, nay. Chair, that concludes roll call with 8 ayes and 5 nays.
With 8 ayes and 5 nays, the motion to re-refer House File 1412 to the House Ways and Means Committee prevails, and the bill is on its way.
Thank you, Chair. And I just want to say I didn't.
Oh, sorry,
do a
Chair.
Closing,
I didn't give you a closing comment.
That's okay. I'm
sorry.
Cut it off. I'm afraid to be cut off when the chair's moving one of my bills forward. but I just wanted to say to Lee Johnson's to his comments. I actually was going to be open to filling some dollar amounts, but we will hear this bill as part of our omnibus bill and. In a few weeks, and happy to sort of chat offline process-wise and whatnot. We will have more of a discussion on this with our fuller omnibus bill in a matter of weeks.
Thank you, Chair Howard. With that, I'll give you your gavel back.
And Vice Chair Igbaje, we're switching places here. You're up next with House File 918.
All right. Thank you, Chair Howard. Thank you, members of the committee. So with House File 918, as we've heard many times, stable housing is a fundamental basic need. We know that too many people are facing the detrimental effects of housing insecurity. Home ownership is a part of creating more stability for a family. Owning a home addresses the need of safe, secure, and dignified housing. We know it leads to improvements in education, economic stability, and health. Owning a home is one of the ways that families can build generational wealth in this country. So what this bill proposes to do is support home ownership efforts across the state by providing a strong community organization, Build Wealth Minnesota, with resources it needs to expand home ownership across Minnesota. Build Wealth Minnesota has worked with communities of color since at least 2004 to provide educational programs and loan services to families seeking home ownership. The current funding request of $10 million is for a robust and aggressive campaign to close the racial disparity gap in Minnesota. The funds from this grant will be used to leverage current partnerships and support from banks and other local organizations who work with Build Wealth to help families of color obtain home ownership. The funding would support bringing close to 9,000 families of color into homes within the next 5 to 7 years. And the goal of this program is to help bring down the racial home ownership gap in Minnesota. So I'll move on to my testifiers today. With me is David McGee from Build Wealth, as well as another person from their staff. So we'll start with them.
Thank you. First we have Mr. McGee and then Rochelle Washington.
Thank you.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you for having me. Chairman, and thank you, committee, as well. My name is David McGee, and I'm the executive director of Build Wealth Minnesota. And we have been acting for support of this bill. We have been working to help families get a comprehensive financial education and build wealth, actually, to build wealth. And the number one way of building wealth is through home ownership. We've been doing this since 2004, putting thousands of families into homes, into sustainable jobs, and increasing their stability through the Family Stabilization Plan program. Since 2005, we've been working pretty diligently trying to address the home ownership disparity gap here in the state of Minnesota. I heard Warren Hansen speak a little earlier about the disparity gap being 25% of households that are black are homeowners and 75% are white in the state of Minnesota. But in the city of Minneapolis, that number is 19%, and in the city of St. Paul, 16%. And since I've started in 2005 and doing this work, the disparity gap is actually getting wider. And the Twin Cities is one of the worst, has one of the worst disparities in the country, as Minnesota continues to be one of the most, the best states in the world to live in, and the prosperity as well with a lot of families. It's been a challenge. So in 2021, we launched the 9,000 Equities Initiative to help families get into, 9,000 families get into home ownership. Over the next 7 years of that initiative, we've been able to get several stakeholders, several banks, several foundations, several corporate organizations to all come together to help us fund this opportunity. We are using the $10 million to help leverage and build a loan fund, which we launched in May. One similar we had called the Targeted Mortgage Opportunity Program that Minnesota Housing worked with us back in 2014 and 15. We're bringing a similar loan product because the loan products that are currently on the market have been around with the same underwriting criteria for nearly 80 years and haven't changed. And so we need to have kind of a little more lenient loan product, not a subprime loan product, but a product that allows for some compensating factors to have families that have had a challenge getting into home ownership and accessing loan products right now. There are some products in the marketplace that require mortgage insurance, which with the high cost of housing going up and the interest rates that are rising is making it very difficult to afford any houses that are decent. So we've been using this loan product to help families access some affordable and favorable housing. And so we're hoping that you support this bill for us to continue moving on with this particular program. All of the families that go through this loan program go through long-term comprehensive education, financial coaching. There's some matching savings programs that are part of the product as well that help people build up enough money just in case life hits them. And or there's some challenges with maintenance items. We don't want them to run into trouble as soon as they buy their house, and 9 months later they need a water heater and they have no money. So we're actually matching savings to actually help boost the opportunity for them not to go back into trouble after they purchased a home. So we're hoping that you guys will support this. We really appreciate the opportunity to come and speak about it today.
Thank you. Next we have Rochelle Washington.
Good afternoon. I don't know why I feel so nervous. I just feel so nervous.
You're amongst friends.
I don't know. Let me see. Who's buying me dinner?
Should I bring some cookies?
That would have been nice. So I am Rochelle Washington. I am the first in four generations on my mom's side and my dad's side to ever purchase a home. I don't want to cry. About maybe
4 years ago, I joined David's program to help with my credit. My credit score was a 545. I had attended his courses, and then I started to repair my credit. I stopped repairing my credit because life got in the way. So I kind of put it on the back burner. And then last year, I went real heavy. No, 2020, I went really heavy on paying off my credit, paying off things that I own with David and a mentor and a coach that literally walked me step by step. We printed out my credit report. We went line for line for line, what I was going to say, who I was going to call, what I was going to do, how to negotiate, how to talk them down, everything, literally. Like, they literally held my hand, and I needed that to move me to the next phase. I was in the home that I was in for about 14 years. I told my landlord that I didn't want to sign another year lease. He said, no problem. He came to the house. He was like, you can go month to month now. So when you do find a house and you are ready to purchase, you don't have to pay your rent and pay your mortgage. Not 5 days later, after he came to my house and he had this conversation with me and my children, he sent a certified letter in the mail saying I had 30 days to get out. Oh, I was so hurt. So hurt. So I called David, called my coach, like, oh my God, I know I stopped, I slowed down, I need help right now. He gave me 30 days to get out. I was like, I don't know what I'm going to do. He was like, don't worry about it, Rochelle. Mostly everything you have is cleared up, but we're going to need at least 3 to 4 months for everything to clear, your credit to build up. Don't worry, we'll figure it out. COVID hit. The moratorium hit. Oh! I ain't got to go nowhere. I'm staying right here until I finish my credit. So that helped. Like, that bought me, like, a whole year. But I didn't need the whole year. It took me about maybe 6 months and then another 8 months to find a house. Oh, my God. Everybody was outbidding me. There was like 35 people bidding on one home. People were paying $30,000 over the asking cost with no inspection. This is my first house. I got to get it inspected. I don't want it to fall apart when I buy it. Oh, no. But I found a house, brand new. Built from the ground up, PRG, David. They told me I had to bring $1,500 down to closing. When I got to the closing, they gave me a check back. I've been in my house now a whole year. They sent me a $5,000 check back. I'm going on vacation. But now I'm proud to say that I have a credit score of 791. I can buy whatever I want. So with that being said, my son is going to buy his first home in this program. My daughter just got a 680. She's going to be purchasing her home in this program. And if it wasn't for Build Wealth taking the time with me on my time, and when I kicked up the gear, they kicked up the gear. When I slowed down the gear, they slowed down the gear. Like, it was on me to do what I needed to do for my next level. So this program literally saved me from being homeless. So yeah, that's all I have to say. And oh, before that, I was in Section 8. I was a Section 8 recipient for over 20 years. 20 years. But yeah, I'm not now, so it's real. The bills are the same amount that they were back then. But yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
791.
Thank you, Ms. Washington.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else like to testify? If not, we do have an A1 amendment. Actually, we have an A1 and an A2. We'll go with the A1 first. Who's offering the A1? Is that?
Be me.
Representative Dotseth.
Thank you, Chair Howard. My amendment is a real simple amendment, Representative Abadze. Looking to just adjust the line one, page one, line 18, delete $10 million, just insert $5 million. Page two, line three, just insert, what I'd like to do is just basically a real simple adjustment. I want to have it among statewide where it's serving all communities, all undeserved communities, including the Hispanic, the Hmong, and all tribal communities. I think in greater Minnesota, that's a need that we have where I'm from. This is a one-time appropriation, and I just, I think it's a real friendly amendment. I think that this is something that would make sense for all of Minnesotans. I think that's, you know, I think it's equitable for everyone. I think this is reasonable and fair. I would ask that you consider that today, please. Thank you.
Representative Igbaje.
Thank you, Chair Howard. Thank you, Representative Dotseth. I appreciate what you are trying to do in this amendment. I will just kind of call attention to a couple of things. First, we have, you know, Build Wealth is requesting $10 million because that is the need that they see that they have. Unlike how we've discussed in some other bills, this bill has actually been thought out, and we've come to a number that makes sense for the work that Build Wealth does and the need that they see to continue to do that work. On the piece about expanding to greater Minnesota, I will say that in one of Build Wealth's recent reports to MHFA, they do most of their work in Hennepin County, but they also move throughout the metro area, and they also work with households outside of the seven county metro area as well. I will say that, and Mr. McGee can probably add more information, but for an organization that is based here and is continuing to build its capacity, I think it will take time for it to expand beyond where it is now, but that is something that they are doing. And then the organization has always been open to all communities, you know, particularly communities of color, but it is not specific to only one demographic. So with that, I would recommend a no vote on this amendment.
Representative Dotson.
Question, would you consider amending it if we kept the language where it actually includes all communities, all groups, including Hispanic, Hmong, statewide, if we maybe adjusted that number?
Representative Igbaje.
Chair Howard, Representative Dotson. I think it's something we can continue to talk about. I know that we'll probably still have some time as we're putting the budget together, so we can talk about it, but at this time, the way it is, I'm not quite comfortable with it yet.
And that is true. There would be time to work on this together before its inclusion. It is going to be laid over for possible inclusion.
It'll be laid over, thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Representative Johnson.
Chair Howard, Representative Badgie, I wish you would consider this amendment as a starting point. Yeah, we can look at the number of the dollar amount. I'm sure that's going to change. But I'm also nervous or concerned about the group that's it's going to. It was interesting. We had a slide presentation in the last bill. Yes, about 25% of African Americans only own homes. I wish that was higher. Asian Indians only own about 43% own a home. The Ojibwe, it's only about 47%. There again, African American, 25%. I wish they were up higher like the others that I said. But then we have the Somali, less than 8%. And this organization that this money goes to only does it for one, and it's in their mission statement and in their thing, for one community. Leaving out everybody else in the state of Minnesota. I see Mr. McGee, the executive director, the CEO actually is both, according to their 990, is taking a stand. He's going to probably see that they do other communities or other individuals of color, which is great. But if you look at their website in the front page, it says a black community. I don't care where you live. Every Minnesotan is the same. I want everybody to have the equal opportunity. And this amendment starts that process. Instead of singling out, we need to treat everybody and get everybody the best they can. This amendment is a start.
Uh,
I'm going to ask for a roll call on this amendment because it puts a place where people are going to have to start thinking about what they're doing. Our governor ran on one Minnesota, one Minnesotan. That means every one of us are equal. Yet this bill is, you can say it's targeted, but it's not equal. We tried to bring in some other groups that are in the same situation, and we were told by the author, no. Like I say, I request the roll call, and I'll let see what Representative Bajaj has to say.
Roll call being requested. I'll go to Representative Bajaj. I just want to make a comment myself. The notion of we want Minnesotans to have an equal access at a home, the dream of home ownership, I just want to highlight that that has not been the experience of this country. And systemic racism has caused these deep racial inequities. And I applaud the bill author and the organization for doing the work to undo some of that harm. But Representative Bajaj.
Thank you, Chair Howard. I'll actually turn it over to Mr. McGee. He would like to say a few words.
Yes, Chairman, I'm not sure which website you looked at. Our website is www.buildwealthmn.org. And as you will see, it says clearly we serve all people from all over the world we've served. It says Caucasian is the first thing that we serve. And we typically serve all people consistently. There's nothing on our website that says that we serve only black people. That would be absolutely incorrect. So I invite everybody to go to the website right now. We can pull it up.
Representative,
it says clearly that we serve Somali, Caucasian, Panamanian, Russian, Romanian, and the list goes on. And it clearly states that right on the first page of our website. I'm not sure if you have the right website or not, but we serve all people. We'll continue to serve all people. And we've been serving people all over the state. We actually have been the family stabilization program that we started as took to Minnesota Housing, which it influenced us to start the homeowners program that is statewide now. And it's in 25 different areas. There's 25 organizations around the state that are providing the long-term education with the coaching through home ownership capacity. That was a direct influence of Build Wealth's Family Stabilization Plan program to supply this information over the entire state. We are also now serving several communities in Rochester, in Burnsville, in Shakopee, and several other cities around the state, St. Cloud and Duluth. And so we are serving all people. We actually do outreach to about 18 organizations. We are now doing the work in 11 schools and Hennepin Tech. And those groups of folks are not all black people. They're people from all different races and nationalities and creeds.
Representative Fasan, we are on the A1 amendment.
Yes, Mr. Chair. I'm looking at the bill, and the bill does say that this home ownership opportunities is in underserved communities of color. So I don't know where the specific black community came from. But even if it was like if it was written and said black community, when there is a fire in one home, we don't say like we're gonna wait until everybody else catches a fire and we're gonna put out a fire. We put out that fire. The black community in the state of Minnesota has the worst home ownership rate. So if there's a program that comes through this committee that says we're going to fund programs that are going to increase the numbers in the black community, I don't understand how that becomes a problem. And just FYI, Somali is ethnicity. The race is black. So Somalis are included in the black community of Minnesota. But I don't see. We have this country has a history of creating special programs for people. The GA program, when after World War II or World War I, I can't even remember. I can't think that far. But what I'm saying is that like I don't understand where the notion that we have a problem with you know, a program that's going to uplift people from the bottom and going to help them create some wealth. That's my two cents. Thank you.
Representative Hussein, I do want to mention we have another two bills on the calendar. This is going to be laid over for possible inclusion. We're on the A1 amendment. Representative Hussein.
Thank you for bringing this bill forward. I only see in the website underserved community. I haven't seen anything else. And thank you for taking care of the community and educating them and closing that gap for the equity. And thank you, Representative Baca.
Representative Perez Vega.
Thank you, Chairman Howard, and thank you to the author and to the community that's here of this great organization that's been a champion in making sure that we have financial literacy in our communities, in all communities. I know this great work. I was a teen when this organization was founded and the legacy that it's had in this state, in particular in our communities that are hurting the most. You don't find a way of putting a Band-Aid on it. You find a way of healing these wounds and getting people into that financial literacy, into housing. Gracias.
Representative Johnson, and we're going to vote on the A1.
I was asked where I got that information. This funding does go to Minnesota, was it the Minnesota Housing or Build Wealth Minnesota. But if you look at lines, the end of line 1.19 and 1.20, it's for the 9,000 equity funds. And I just Googled 9,000 equity funds, where this information is. And right on the top header, helping black families own a house, which is great, but I think everybody should. We have other communities, other ethnicities and stuff that are hurt, that need the help too. And I'm concerned that issues that are going down in Minneapolis and St. Paul that have been under DFL control for decades, actually almost a century now, those were the policies that did this. And I'm sorry that it happened. We're doing our best to fix it. But we all need to work together. And that means helping everyone and not just singling out a certain person or a certain race. We're all in this together. Let's help everybody together, because the issues that you have down there, down here in this area, we have some of the same issues, but it's different people. And it doesn't help them. I want everybody to have an opportunity to own a house, a home. Not just a house, a home. Because with that own home comes equity. I brought this up before, and I've been scolded that because somebody enjoyed renting. Yes, if they want to rent, that's fine. But you get your equity in your home. I want everybody to have a home. I see some people shaking their heads. I'm concerned. But it's important that we do things to help people, but we have to help everybody. Everybody is equal. Whether they live in Minneapolis, St. Paul, Roseau, Worthington, Marshall. We need to help everyone the best we can. It's unfortunate that the government has taken over helping people, because it used to be our churches and our communities helped each other. But that's what happened when government gets involved. Everybody wants everything for nothing. But guess what? It's the taxpayers that are paying for these bills. And we have a big problem with nonprofits or not-for-profits with their hands out at the taxpayers' expense. I think we need to start looking at what's going on. Because I do want to help people. But we have to do it the right way and treat everybody equally. And with that, I'll let you continue, Chair Howard.
I'm going to call for the A1 amendment. Did you have a roll call, Representative Johnson? Or is this Representative Batsis' amendment?
Chair Howard, I'd like to call a roll call, but I'd like to also add, Abadjay, I'd like you to know that the intent behind this is nothing ill. I think it was just to make sure that we're all inclusive for everyone. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Batsis. Please take the roll on the A1.
Chair Howard.
Chair votes no.
Chair Howard, nay. Vice Chair Gbajay.
No.
Vice Chair Gbajay, nay. Representative Johnson.
Yes.
Representative Johnson, aye. Representative Cha.
No.
Nay. Representative Dotseth.
Aye.
Representative Dotseth, aye. Representative Hassan.
No.
Representative Hassan, nay. Representative Hussein. No. Representative Hussein, nay. Representative Kozlowski.
Kozlowski, no.
Representative Kozlowski, nay. Representative Myers.
Nay.
Representative Myers, nay. Representative Nash.
No.
Representative Nash, nay. Representative Norris.
No.
Representative Norris, nay. Representative Perez Vega.
Nope.
Representative Perez Vega, nay. Representative Petersburg.
Yes.
Representative Petersburg, aye. Chair, that concludes roll call with 3 ayes and 10 nays.
There is an A2. Who's offering the A2? Anybody? Going once, going twice? Is it yours, Representative Dotseth, or no?
Repeat that again?
There's an A2 amendment that was filed. I just don't know if anyone was going to offer it. If not, we can proceed to closing comments from Representative Bajay or to discussion on the bill. Representative Shaw.
Thank you, Chair Howard. Rochelle Washington, I'm your friend.
I hope so.
And you remind me of my mother when she first got her first home, because she went through a similar program where she got educated on her credit score and, you know, mortgage rates and, you know, PMI, all these things, closing costs, HUD 1, TIL, whatnot. I think this is a great program. And I just want to comment that I want to thank the government for helping me and my family. That's how we got into our first home.
Yeah.
We live in Section 8 homes.
Yeah.
And I'm here today because of those investments.
Yeah.
So thank you to the government.
Representative Myers.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for bringing this bill forward. There's definitely some things I like about this, the idea behind it. The question I had was, and this may lead to sounding like I want to spend more money, actually. I'm just interested. Yes, I know. I'm interested to know from either of you. You know, it talks about the 9,000 homes. You know, what is $10 million going to accomplish? Because, you know, I'm looking at there's been some individuals served. You know, I'm just trying to look at the breakdown of funds and actually see what that's going to accomplish for you with the $10
million. Mr. McGee?
Chairman, the $10 million is being used to leverage a loan fund, and it's being actually aligned with others. So Bremer Bank has agreed to purchase $90 million worth of loans from Build Wealth, so we can actually do the first mortgages with the $10 million and keep reciprocating the fund and actually start earning revenue to be less dependent on the government by earning revenue to pay for our own way as the loan pool continues to progress. And so right now we started out, we're at $5 million. We're hoping to raise another $27 million. And we'll be actually doing loans for probably, 100 to 200 families at a time, selling those loans, reciprocating the pool, earning revenue off of it, and continuing to do loans.
Representative Myers?
The dollar figure itself, though, I mean, if you didn't get some of those other partners in there, I'm just trying to get in my own head how many potential, families this would help serve.
Chairman, we're doing about 20. It's usually the average loan size is $227,000.
Okay.
And so $10 million will probably get us 40 to 50 families, but we'll be able to leverage that with other funding. And then, like I said, reciprocate those, sell them, restore the pool, sell them, restore the pool. And on.
Thank you.
Representative Kozlowski.
Thank you, Chair Howard. I think my microphone isn't working, so hopefully I'll speak up.
I wanted to say thank you, of course, big supporter of this bill and the work, as we've been having lots of conversations here and in many other committees on growing and regrowing that generational wealth. And some of the conversation very much is, will be a broken record, that is the government's making through redlining and racial covenants, termination and urban relocation programs that separated us from our communities and our land and our place in each other, and dumped us into places like St. Paul and Minneapolis. And so there's lots and lots of reasons. But I want to focus on, as somebody who also grew up on Section 8, and holla to you, you know, I always say don't ever underestimate a cycle breaker, but I want to say to you that you're a cycle maker and a legacy maker is what this program's doing. I think it's fantastic. Would I love a program like this in my community? I heard some of it's being supported. I look forward to doing work to be able to support this across the state. But as has been mentioned, it's really important that it is led by and with and for our communities. And so that work cannot be understated that you are doing. And, you know, I also want to call out partnerships with our private entities who have also had a hand in doing and how we undo the systems and the housing. And so Bremer Bank has actually a really amazing racial equity plan. And so I applaud you in that partnership. And my question is also around the post-home buyer class. I think the really magnificent thing about this bill is the matching savings and paired with that long-term support. So could you just share a little bit about what that looks like and how that helps support people and for kind of how long? And then, okay, this is my last comment. When you came up to the microphone, you used the $7.91. I thought it was Price is Right and Bob Barker.
Mr. McGee?
Chairman, the program originally was set up as a two-year program. And so there's 10 weeks of classes that you go through, and then you're paired up with a coach, and that coach is scheduled to work with you for up to 2 years, and they do these six-month action plans. We have program benchmarks like credit and savings plans and income and a number of things that it takes for a family to really raise itself out of poverty and stay out of poverty. Then the family also has some goals that it wants, like home ownership is. We love everybody to be in home ownership, but it has to be a family goal. And the family has goals to get rid of debt and to do some different things. And so that combination of that client working with a series of coaches helps them to get to that place. Usually it's 2 years. We've easily had families there 11 years. As with Ms. Washington had said, life challenges sometimes stop people right in their tracks. We get people sometimes that are on a cliff. They've never saved money before. They self-sabotage, like, wow, they're actually getting ready to buy a house, and it scares them quite a bit. It's scary to come out of a place and all of a sudden you're going to be a homeowner. Especially I have a lot of challenges with men, believe it or not. A lot of men have been through so many challenges of redlining and discrimination and a number of other things that they tend to think they're going to get foreclosed on before they even close. So there's a lot of challenges that are part of this process, and it takes a while. It's hard. Everyone in the room and everyone I've ever coached over the last 20 years, all of us have trauma. All of us have scars that are related to finances. And so dealing with people with financial trauma and family trauma is always tied to finances. And so sometimes it's a long road to get somebody on track, to get stable, to get in a position, especially to do something as big as own a home.
Representative Johnson, and then we're going to do one more bill after this. We can go till 3:45. So Representative Johnson.
Chair Howard, Representative Badgey. I understand this bill, and Mr. McGee, I want to thank you for the work you do. You do what needs to be done. Ms. Washington, congratulations. I am proud that you were able to get your own home. It takes a lot of work. unfortunately, some of the personal decisions that we make in our life have repercussions. It took me a while before I get my first home because of poor habits and lack of saving. But I want to thank you, Mr. McGee, for the work you do. It's one thing that I've advocated for, the whole wraparound services. That's what we need. And any bill that goes out towards this, any type of funding for housing issues should include those wraparound services, especially on the homeless side of it. Because without them, they're doomed to failure and repeat what they already did. So again, thank you for the work. The concern I had was that it was just one area that would, because it's different across the state. And the program you have, I'm glad you're moving across the state, and I hope you open it up to everybody, because that you have the service that we need. So thank you.
And you always want to go to the bill author to make a closing statement, so I'll go to Vice Chair Agbaje.
You can skip me. I skipped you last time. I'm sorry. I will. There's a couple of things I want to say. I will try really hard to keep it brief. But the issue and part of the reason we have programs like this is because the United States government had put out specific policies to keep out people of color, and not just black people, but black people in particular, but people of the Jewish faith, Native Americans, Asians, Latinos, you name it. We are now at a time when we have the opportunity to rectify those harms. And that is what we are doing here. And this bill and this organization actually does work with everyone. But even if they didn't, that would be okay. And so I am grateful that we are having this conversation, Representative Johnson and Representative Dossis. I actually really do want to continue talking with you about this, because I do think it's important that we actually understand what we're saying when we talk about equality, because this country has never been founded to be equal. And we are trying to get there, but part of getting to equality means that we are rectifying the specific harms that were done by the United States government. And so I thank you, the committee, for listening to our testifiers, and for considering not only this program, but all of the programs that we're doing to ensure that housing actually is a safe, stable, dignified place for every American and every Minnesotan to live. So thank you.
Thank you, Vice Chair Agbaje. And I will move that House File 918 be laid over for possible inclusion, and an omnibus bill, and with that, the bill is laid over. Members, we're going to go till 4:45, and we're going to hear House File 1472, Representative Hassan. And I'm just going to say at the outset, this is a bill that probably deserves a little more time. It is going to be laid over for possible inclusion. And so I just want to make that note at the outset. To your bill. Actually, Representative Hassan, I will move that your bill be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. With that, Representative Hassan, please present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. If people want a bill that houses everybody or buys a home for everyone, this is it. This bill touches everybody. House File 1472 is the Home Ownership Program funding. Rep. Nash, you're going to love this because it's going to build more affordable homes, and that adds to our inventory. And I think that was a concern of yours that you have echoed multiple times. I feel like I've been doing this. This is maybe the third time, or I don't know. I lost count how many times I've done this. Talking about home ownership and the importance of home ownership. We know when folks own their homes, it stabilizes neighborhoods, builds generational wealth, and breaks the cycle of poverty. And the impact of owning a home on education is immensely important to me. According to a study in the Journal of Urban Economics, home ownership leads to greater educational achievement. Children of homeowners are significantly more likely to stay in school until the age 17 than children of renters, and especially in low-income households. Minnesota's home ownership rates other people echoed on this space today that household white households roughly own their homes around 80%, while the rate among households of color is around 40%, leaving a gap of 40%. And if you took a closer look at that number, black Minnesotans' home ownership is at 25%. That is less than it used to be in the 1950s. Imagine in the 1950s, more black people own homes in the state of Minnesota than they do today. That, my colleagues, is a shame. We have not made progress in that. We actually have regressed. Back to this bill. This bill appropriates $100 million in the year fiscal year 23 for a newly created home ownership investment grant program. Organizations that are eligible for this grant must be 501c3, based in Minnesota, certified with the U.S. Department of Treasury as affordable housing lending or financing program. Organizations can apply for grants for affordable owner-occupied housing projects, development that increases the supply of homes, financing programs for new home constructions, acquisition, rehabilitation, and resale of homes to home converted to owner-occupied homes, financing programs for manufactured housing, service to increase access to home ownership opportunities in low-income communities, indigenous American Indian communities, and communities of color. The second thing that it does is it appropriates $25.25 million in the fiscal year 2024, and then the same amount in fiscal year 2025 to Minnesota Housing Finance Agency for the Workforce Home Ownership Program that awards grants to cities, tribal governments, nonprofits, and cooperatives. Grants are used to cover development costs, rehabilitation, land development, residential housing, including storm shelters and community facilities. This program was established in 2016, and then $20 million is appropriated in the fiscal year 24, and then another $20 million in fiscal 20. The fiscal year 25 to grant to Build Wealth Minnesota to provide families a stabilization plan program, including program outreach, financial literacy, budget, and debt counseling. With that, Mr. Chair, I have a couple more testifiers, and we will stand for questions. I don't think we're going to get questions, but we'll stand for questions.
Representative Fasan, thank you. We have four testifiers, and I would ask you to be brief to preserve a little chance for a question if it comes up. We have Kristen Setti. First, and then next, that Henry Rucker. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Howard and Representative Hassan and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Kristen Insitti. I'm the CEO of Habitat for Humanity of Minnesota, a statewide community development financial institution, as well as the co-chair of Homeownership Minnesota, which is a coalition of 16 members statewide of practicing affordable homeownership providers. And just wanted to say thank you for the opportunity to testify on behalf of House File 1472. Thank you, Representative Hassan, for chief authoring this bill and to the many signers who have supported this bill. We appreciate your leadership and your support. As the committee has heard several times today and over the past several months, the homeownership market is increasingly unaffordable in our communities across the state, and this bill is designed to invest in key areas that increase access to affordable homeownership, increase the supply of affordable homeownership, and accelerate the impact through affordable housing, community development, financial institutions. This bill is a comprehensive investment, and as Representative Hassan said, touches every corner of the work that we're doing in homeownership, with the goal of closing the racial gap in homeownership and meeting workforce homeownership needs throughout the state. So first, the first part of the bill is $4 million for the Family Stabilization Plan, and you already heard from Build Wealth and Rochelle on the impacts of that program, and as it was noted, increasing the investment in that program to $4 million would mean more families across the state would have the opportunity to participate in that life-changing program. And we all know that informed and financially ready home buyers increases the likelihood of stable, affordable homeownership for these households. The second component, $100 million investment in affordable housing CDFIs to accelerate the production and preservation of affordable homes statewide. CDFIs, or community development financial institutions, are mission-centered financial organizations that strive to reach target markets with their products and services to bolster economic and community development. We're overseen by the Department of Treasury and go through an annual recertification process. CDFIs are known for our ability to create and design products that meet community-identified needs. We support affordable housing projects and homeownership access statewide through our construction lending, financing, and down payment assistance programs and gap financing. Throughout the pandemic and continuing to date, CDFIs have been relied on to distribute urgent resources to our communities to support business and project continuity. Point being, we know how to deploy capital in areas that most need it, and we center our communities in product design. Eligible uses in this program support the opportunity for affordable housing CDFIs to create pilot programs and innovative solutions to respond to investor activity in the homeownership market, meet needs in manufactured home park lending, design new construction financing tools that respond quickly and keep costs low, and increase access to affordable homeownership for households of color in low and moderate income communities. Finally, the investment in the workforce and affordable homeownership program, as I testified in a past hearing on this fund, this program is designed to meet affordability and development gap needs in the homeownership production across the state. And it's been sorely underfunded since its creation, limiting the number of projects it supports. It is the only program that funds only affordable homeownership production, and a deep investment in this program can support the creation of more than 670 units across the state. An example I shared a few weeks ago in this committee is that project in Greater Minnesota that's currently being a recipient that is a partnership between Lakes Area Habitat for Humanity, the Cass County, and the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwa. The investment of this port of this size would create more opportunities for partnerships like that across the state. So in addition to highlighting the key aspects of the bill and their benefits, Homeownership Minnesota has several members of our committee, or of our coalition here, to sort of share a little bit about the impact of home buyer preparation, what the market is like, what it means to become a homeowner, and we're certainly happy to take questions too. So,
thank you. Next, we have Henry Rucker, and on deck, Aaliyah Primus.
Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you, Chair Howard, Representative Hassan, and members of the committee. I was here a few weeks ago, so I appreciate you listening to me again today. I testified on the HECAT around home buyer education that I still think has been brought up quite a bit today. That's very important around the home ownership piece, because I think a lot of times, especially when we're dealing with the BIPOC community, people don't know they're 100% ready to be a homeowner, and we know rents are going up, and it's sometimes cheaper for people to actually be a homeowner than to be a renter. And I think the thing that hurts a lot of people in the BIPOC community, with emphasis on African Americans, is when we're first generation buyers. I've heard people again today mention that they're the first person in their home to buy a house. That makes a difference. Having representation matters, and I think working with your local nonprofits and the community partners that are here today, sometimes we get people over the hump. Sometimes you have to have somebody that's going to be an ally. Even David mentioned earlier today that they work with people from 2 years to 11 years. To me, there's no perfect time for somebody that's going to be able to buy a house if they don't have the proper, I would say, partnership with somebody that's going to coach them through the process. Educating somebody about the wealth that can be created through home ownership is, you can't even put a dollar value on that, because for somebody to rent forever, there's really no equity that you can pass on to anybody. When you become a homeowner, you can pass on that equity. You can use the equity in various ways. The magic number, you guys, honestly, is 75-25. As Representative said, 25% of African Americans own their houses today. 75% of white people in Minnesota own their houses. That's the gap that we have to figure out how to address. One way to address that is through education. The young woman that just testified shared that she bought her house through PRG. My partners at PRG are going to talk here in a little bit. That probably comes through education. That comes from having a trusted source where somebody believes in you and is going to walk you down that line of not saying no. We have a saying in this industry, one of my really good friends, it's never a hard no, it's always a slow yes, right? And sometimes when people go somewhere and they're told no, they believe homeownership can never be for them. But having that education piece, the home stretch piece, that's the 8-hour course to teach people about homeownership, frameworks online that lets allow somebody to also take a class online to learn about the steps of homeownership. I will ask you guys this again. How did you learn about homeownership as a young adult? If you're a renter, right, you never think homeownership is possible for you. We have this campaign called Get Ready, Be Ready. I think that's invaluable because we always want people to be financially ready. She shared about her credit score. What is a credit score? If we talk to our young adults today, Well, they say 620 or 790. There's a big difference of having a 750 credit score versus a 600 credit score. It gives people a lot more options. And I think the piece that we have to really understand is the government did play a major role in the disparity gap. It's proven, right? We know about the red line. We know about the covenants. We know that has existed. And the only way we're going to change that is through education and having trusted sources where people can actually go somewhere and explain to them, I have a 580 credit score, but I want to get to a 690 credit score so I can become a homeowner. Because, again, the number one way to pass on wealth in America is real estate. The second is life insurance. And a lot of people of color don't believe in real estate, and we don't believe in life insurance. And we have to figure out ways to change that mindset of how we think about passing on wealth. And I'll end there.
Thank you. Next, we have Aaliyah Primus. Is it Primus? Primus. Aaliyah Primus. Sorry about that. And up next, Kevin Galden. Thank you, and welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Howard, Representative Hassan, and members of the committee. You can hear me. My name is Aaliyah Primus, and I work at PRG as a homeownership advisor. I also have the unique experience of being able to speak from a few perspectives. I typically don't talk unless I feel like I have something of value to add to a conversation, which is why I'm here today, even though my knees are knocking. I will say that at one point in my life, I was a wife, a mother, a business owner, and a homeowner. And as my life progressed, unexpected things happened. And I became a divorced mother of six, and I lost my home. And me and my six children were homeless. After gaining some stability, I ended up speaking with another homeownership advisor before I became one, and that was actually Henry Rucker. And he really helped provide me with the education and the information that I needed to prepare myself to purchase a home again. So in 2019, I purchased a home. Being a homeowner has impacted my life in so many positive ways. I've been able to create long-term stability for me and my children. I've been able to support and assist other extended family members that were in transition and needed a place to stay. My children have been able to settle and become a part of a community. They've been active in school. They've been able to create lifelong memories and things that'll stay with them, and even the property that we own to be able to pass on to them and even possibly to their children. I think after experiencing homelessness, me and my family both understand the value of homeownership and what it means. And children learn what they live, and those children become adults. And so having the understanding of what it means to own and to have this sense of pride and value is extremely important. Frederick Douglass said that it's easier to raise strong children than repair broken men. And I believe home ownership is a tool that's going to support, especially people of color, underserved communities, to create a sense of pride and belonging that impacts the broader community. And so although my experiences have been painful, I've been able to turn that pain into purpose. And so now I'm a home ownership advisor myself. And doing this work, I'm really concerned about the clients that I see and their ability to have stable housing costs that are affordable. It makes me, wonder if they'll ever be able to have home ownership, if it's possible. When I purchased my home in 2019, the median home price was $280,000. Today, the median home price has increased to nearly $400,000. Interest rates have increased more than 3% in the last year, erasing about $100,000 in buying power for many of our clients. The number of homes for sale have decreased 37% since 2019. And they're just over 118 single-family homes for sale in Minneapolis and St. Paul that are less than $300,000. The House File 1472 includes a number of items aimed at addressing these statistics, and importantly, addressing the lack of supply by building new affordable homes. It's going to take multiple approaches to ensure that people like me have a chance of achieving the American dream. And addressing the lack of inventory is a key to any successful effort. I'm committed to using my voice for this cause, and I'm hopeful that you see the value in this bill. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Last, we have Kevin Golden. Welcome to the committee.
All right, I'll be brief. Thank you, Chair Howard, Representative Hassan, and committee members. My name is Kevin Golden. I'm a project manager with PRG. You heard us mentioned a couple times today. We're a nonprofit affordable housing developer here in the metro area. And I'm here to highlight how community development financial institutions, CDFIs, can respond quickly and rapidly to a changing landscape. A portion of the funding in this bill will work towards affordable housing ownership production. Some of you might recall in the aftermath of the George Floyd incident and the pandemic, funding was administered through this stream and deployed to those who needed it and got to those with the greatest need. With that said, affordable housing in this space, the CDFI is underutilized, especially with and in the production of home ownership. In early 2022, for example, PRG was faced with a shortfall in our budget during the construction of 6 new affordable homes. We were looking to delay and not even move forward on these homes until we were able to seek additional funding. A chance conversation with Habitat for Humanity, a CDFI, revealed that they had funds available for the purpose of completing our work, and we could deploy these quickly. Within 5 weeks, PRG had these funds in hand. We proceeded with construction and did not miss another short Minnesota construction season. Today, these houses are now complete, and the first of these homes will be sold to a BIPOC household when it closes later this month. This will narrow the racial home ownership gap and provide safe and stable home for a new family of 5. This is a win for all involved. We face a continuing housing crisis, and a portion of the funding in this bill will provide CDFIs another ability to be nimble and flexible and give affordable homeowner developers like PRG another funding, another tool in the toolbox, and another tool for homeownership production. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Members, we do have time for, if there's some brief questions and comments that members have them. Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And we're getting really close, Representative Son. You know, there are houses that there are homes that we rent, and there are homes that we own, and they're all very important. I'm grateful that we're addressing the supply problem, and I believe that, and I think I can, if we can work on this some, I think there's some work. You know, I have swung hammers with the chair to build some of the houses that would fall into this. I think it's important that when we work on this, we also put our money where our mouth is personally. So I took a day off of work, and I think it was like 100 degrees. It was not a cool Minnesota day. But I appreciate this. I do want to work on this with you. I think that this has been around, I think, since 2016?
Yep.
2016. So for my members, we voted on this. We helped bring, it was in our majority, and we brought this forward. And I think that this is something that, in a bipartisan manner, that we can work on. Because the testifier that was the single mother of 6, I mean, that's fantastic. To be able to plug your kids into a stable community. And what I wish I would have heard from her as well, because I'm almost positive it's true. Not only was their family stabilized, but they helped their community also become a richer community from their experience and the things that they brought to bear as well. So we're there, I think. We're getting really close. And I wish that this would be a solo bill, perhaps, Mr. Chair. So I think that there's stuff that we can work on here, Representative Hassan, and thanks for doing this.
Representative Johnson.
Chair Howard, Representative Hassan, thank you. This is a bill that I do support. I'm not sure about the dollar amount yet. That's one we have to work on.
Fred Meyers agrees with the dollar amount. So.
But it's a good program. I myself have worked on Habitat for Humanity homes. A friend of mine actually, a person in my deer hunting party, actually ended up living in one. It's a good program. And the other one listed in here that we just heard from, they do a great job in the training. And the training that they do should be statewide. Because that's what needs to be done in order to learn what's all involved in owning a home. And I want to thank Ms. Primus. She explained it so well, the pride you have when you own a home and the equity and how it can change your life and your family. And so I want to thank her again for her testimony. And with that, I'll let, unfortunately, this bill is being laid on the table. I'd like to see it move forward.
If the chair wants to purchase the money, we can send it to Ways and Means.
I'll go to Representative Hassan for closing comments. I do want to return the compliment. I think I've heard you present this bill a number of times, and I've really appreciated your dedicated leadership in pushing the legislature I'll go to Representative Cha here, but I just want to thank you for continuing to push us to do better and to do more when it comes to affordable home ownership. Representative Cha.
Thank you, Chair Howard, and thank you for extending the time to have the conversation. As we discussed, these conversations needs to be had. To the testifier about life insurance and mortgages, I just want to share some perspective that API, Asian people, don't believe in debt, not 30 years debt. We don't like to pay on a 30-year mortgage. We don't like to be in debt. We like to pay cash for everything. It took us a very long time to understand the concept of mortgages and life insurance. So that's very true what you said. I want to thank Rep. Hassan for your leadership. You said you would deliver something to Nash, and you did. So thank you.
Rep. Hassan, final word.
Thank you, Mr. Chair members. This bill is about equity. This bill is about adding more affordable homes to our inventory. It's about closing the racial wealth gap in Minnesota. It's about stabilizing neighborhoods and families. Let's build more homes.
With that, the bill is laid over for possible inclusion in omnibus bill. And we are adjourned.